Well, December is a great time for family and friends to get together and reminisce, and we'll be doing a little of that right now with our friend from Our Wisconsin Magazine, the editor, Mike Bino. I'm Larry Mueller. Of course, great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We'll talk with him about some old traditions like Yule bucking. We can talk about some sweet memories of Christmas candy and pageants and acts of kindness that can bring back the spirit of the season. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. Maybe you've got a story to share, or maybe a special thing that goes on in your community that you'd love to have Our Wisconsin Magazine maybe write about sometime, or maybe you can write about it and send it to Our Wisconsin. Anyway, the number to call for your comments is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Mike Bino, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Larry, it's great to be here, and I was interested in listening to Beth. Even though it was healthy eating, I was getting hungry, and as a longtime journalist yourself, Larry, we ought to just share the journalist diet. I mean, I'm eating the nice one when we're on duty. Yeah, bucket and a half black coffee, and we're on our way, aren't we?
That's how the day gets started, or sometimes just before you're sitting down to write a story or get a special project done. That is for sure. Well, a magazine is filled with all kinds of interesting stories, and I wanted to mention one right away because I just read a story yesterday, it might have been in the Washington Post, about corner drugstores and the fact that some of the big box places drove corner drugstores kind of out of business in many small towns. And that now those bigger box stores have decided that they don't want to do the pharmacy work anymore because of online ordering or whatever. And this has resulted in a return to corner drugstores that are often now run by pharmacists that used to work for that big box store. So I thought that was pretty interesting story in light of a story that you have in your book, in your magazine this time, which is an ode to the corner drug.
Well, thanks for that news, Larry. I missed this report. And really, the person we should have on to, this would make a fascinating story for you to talk about, I think, if we got Peter Morton to come and talk with you. Peter Morton grew up in a family of pharmacists in Neenah. The Morton drug chain got up to about 13 stores, and of course, you remember the drug stores in Madison, the Rennebaums there.
Yeah.
Hubs of the community, lunch counters, the soda fountain, and ice cream, and books and magazines, and you went in there to get your prescription filled. Sometimes in the very early days, there were compounding pharmacies where they made it up, ground it up right there for you. But you know, more often in recent years, it was counting the pills. But you waited your turn, and you weren't in a rush. You ordered something to eat. You visited with neighbors there. Sooner or later, Mr. Morton said, you saw everybody there. And the pharmacist was right up front, cracking jokes with people, and kind of standing back and working. Somebody's at the counter waiting on the customers. And you just got to know one another. So you've got that business model. And Mr. Morton told us that 95% of their business was pharmacy there, okay? Now, with the big box stores and the larger drug chains on the corners, you can get, well, beach balls and liquor and lawn chairs and just about every kind of food and candy in there. They got a little bit of everything in there. And I'm guilty. I run in and out of those places very fast. I don't stop and talk very much. Seems like I don't know the people behind the counter so much because they kind of come and go, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it's not as homey as it was. And what we also heard was that the big box stores of the world would bring in, they would have a pharmacy counter, and that would be 4 to 5% of their revenue. It was really to draw people into the store. You're going to wait a while, so you're going to do a little shopping. And it's turned around. So what you just shared with me is very interesting, and I hope we return to that. But our story by Dan Flannery interviewing Peter Morton, he's talking about the days in 1932 when his grandfather Charles started his first business in the Depression. He didn't know what he was thinking. He invested $600 of his own money to open Economy Drugs at Wisconsin Avenue in Appleton. He leased a space for $55 a month and sold Cokes for a nickel apiece, and that's the way he made it forward. But what was interesting about the 30s is, I alluded to this a little before, and I find it fascinating. Not all that long ago did you need the lengthy education required of today's pharmacists. It's a 5 and 6 year program now. Charles Morton took a 6 month course at Marquette and passed a board exam, and then started compounding medicines right there. Steve said he didn't kill anybody, as far as he knew.
It was, I saw that article in the, I think it was the Post yesterday, and I immediately thought of that story that I had read on the an ode to the corner drug, because it sounds like that corner drug store is coming back, especially in many smaller communities, a couple thousand people or 1,000 people or whatever. That the pharmacists are coming back, and maybe we'll be able to go in. Like I when I was a kid, we'd go, and my dad would usually spring for a butterscotch malt.
Well, there you go. that wasn't on Beth's menu in the last segment here. Yeah, it was just so friendly. The drugstore I recall growing up was the Alloway drugstore around Green Bay, and the Lurquins ran it, and Mr. Lurquin in his white coat was standing back there, and he would he'd say, "Oh no, here comes trouble," and his wife Maureen would be at the counter, at the soda counter, and she'd look at you with just a straight deadpan face and say, "I thought this was going to be a good day." And you just had fun with them, Josh, and while you did business. Wonderful, wonderful memories, and I hope they're coming back.
Well, there are a lot of memories in this issue of holidays past, Christmases past, many of those stories that are heartwarming stories so often in our Wisconsin magazine.
Yeah, as we head into Christmas, you know, Christmas lends itself, when we're talking about the December, January issue here, Christmas lends itself to memories. And, you know, our Wisconsin, we try to keep primarily as a current day magazine. There's energy in current stories that are going on. But people, when they have some very heartfelt memories and are sharing them, they can be pretty moving. So I've often made the joke here that we do try to be 100% positive, and people like that formula. Around this time of year, if you read enough of this, maybe you'll get diabetes. I don't know, but our folks love these memories. And truth be told, I love listening to them from our readers. Our readers do most of the writing, and then presenting them in the magazine. It touches people.
It does indeed. And we're going to be talking about many of those stories coming up, because Mike Bino is going to be with us right up till 12:30 today. Mike, again, editor of Our Wisconsin magazine. And I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Or email us those experiences to ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Mike Bino. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Mike Bino, editor of Our Wisconsin magazine, as we talk with him about some of the stories in the magazine, and hope to hear from you as well. Have you got an experience during this season that you'd like to share, or maybe a question to ask about the magazine itself? I hope you'll join us. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And just a quick mention, Jill Nadeau is our producer for this show, and Mackenzie Crummy, our on-air producer. Trina LaSusa, of course, maintains that engineering chair. She's smiling at me right now and gave me the thumbs up. Mike, let's do a thumbs up for Eula bucking.
Oh, thank you very much. Good lead in. Eula bucking, and I'm particularly glad you told me how to say that. Me from the eastern side of the state, it kind of looks like jewel buking. But,
well, you know, I was born in Stoughton, Wisconsin.
Okay, and this story mentions Stoughton. I think we'll get around to that. How do you pronounce that May festival again?
Sitnamai.
Thank you. We'll talk about that next time because it's going in the April-May issue. Eula bucking. So, it's interesting because this story comes out of Coon Valley, Wisconsin, in the Driftless region over near La Crosse. And the writer's talking about his neighbors in the 30s, and he's interviewing some of his older neighbors now in their 90s. Who talk about Eula bucking. Now, picture a sort of trick-or-treating around Christmas time with homemade costumes made out of feed sacks and wood and these disguises, and groups of people, as they headed to the holidays in these very rural areas, would go door-to-door in disguise, and they'd stop at the home and be allowed to go inside. The little kids were tremendously frightened because people were wearing masks and wigs and big coats and all kinds of get-ups. And they try to guess who these folks are. And they get together and go through that. And if your identity was not figured out, you were very proud. And by the time all that's done, they would have a little bit of holiday cheer, some cookies, maybe something to drink, some music would be played, and they'd have a little celebration for a short while, and the revelers would go on to the next house. Sometimes they were adults, sometimes they were adults with children, sometimes they were just children. And they would go up and down the coulees there, the valleys, between the ridges, and stopping at the farms on the flat ground. And visiting. The tradition, it said, came here in the 1830s, a little bit after that, with the Norwegian people, other Scandinavians too. And it's Eula buck translates to mean Christmas goat. And the Norse legend of Thor, the god of thunder, was thought to have driven his goat-powered chariot across the heavens. And the costumes sometimes reflected that, and with the goat. Interesting thing that wasn't mentioned in this story, Larry, we got a story here from somebody around Polonia, Stevens Point, Amherst, about 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago. And this person remembered seeing people doing the same sort of thing, coming in with a wooden goat's head on one of them, complete with a clacking jaw, which just sent the kids under the beds. They didn't. So that area is quite predominantly Polish. And she was writing some of the Polish words that surrounded this. So there's some similarity. They're not the same parts of the world, but somehow they landed in Wisconsin. And our readers tell us about this.
Well, another a tradition that many look forward to, of course, this time of the year is candy. And I couldn't believe how much candy in a small store in Wyawega used to go through. That absolutely blew my mind.
Yeah, and again, this is part of the fun of working on this magazine is reaching out to people, inviting them to send their stories in, and in they come, and you learn a lot. The town of Wyawega had its very own candy man. Marty Vey ran the Fairway grocery store right downtown. This was at a time when there were, in small communities, there might be 3 or 4 grocery stores in a small town. But he got into the grocery business at age 13, and finally, as a kid, starting out sweeping the floor. By age 27, he bought the business, and he ran it until 1989.
Long time.
He's 78 years old. But he would order hard candy and bring it into the store, move everything else aside. This is when the store might hold 50-pound bags of flour, and you get vinegar right out of the barrel and for pickling season. Small-town grocer who had everything. And he would bring in the 100-pound bags of potatoes and all that. But that stuff all got shoved aside when he would bring in literally tons of candy. He had an in with the Hershey Company in Pennsylvania because he found them cheap butter, and so they made sure he was covered with as much candy as possible, even when it was a tough time to get it during the war years. Up to 6 tons in this tiny store of bulk candy he would get from Brock's and others, even during World War II. 12,000 to 16,000 pounds of chocolate drops and stars in this little place. And the interesting thing was they'd sell it all. Marty Vey made the comment to his daughter, who's Cheryl Themer of Appleton, who's writing the story. After Christmas, you can't give this stuff away, but somehow they sold it all. It brings back wonderful memories. Now I'm going to just share 2 quick ones. What's the other neat thing about inviting readers to send in these memories? People write you and say, I remember that too. In our Susan Weatherwax of Marinette said she was moved to tears by this story. She never met small-town grocer Marty Vey, but she says, I'll never forget those markets where everybody knew your name. You could select candies from big boxes, and the clerk used a metal scoop, weighed out your purchase. She said, I wish I'd met him. And one more, Sandy Hetfield from Fremont, right in that same neighborhood. She said, I grew up in Wyawega. I well recall going to the Fairway Grocery every week with my mom, and we talked to Marty. I couldn't wait for that selection of bulk candy and salted peanuts that took over the store at Christmas time.
Great stories. Rich from Green Bay emailed. They've been reading your magazine for years, and Rich says, and he wishes it had more diversity. He wonders, how do you incorporate different races, cultures, and traditions from around Wisconsin into the magazine?
Good question. Yes, it's okay. It is a little bit of a catch-22. If you're running a magazine in which you're relying on the readers to bring in their to share their stories and photos, okay, you get what comes in. If most of what comes in are Caucasian people, you start publishing that. Well, if a person of color takes a look at the magazine and sees nothing about people like them, they won't pick it up. And guess what? They won't see the solicitation to send in your stuff. And so two things I tell folks who make this point, and it's a very good point. Three things, actually. The first thing is, as a business person, a publisher, I'd be pretty stupid to exclude anybody because everybody's money is good here. Okay.
Yeah.
Next, we really do try. We have we've run many stories on Native Americans. There are plenty of folks in Wisconsin in different tribes have had their stories published here, and we have had Black and Hispanic people show in the magazine fairly often. We would like more. The third thing I tell folks, if you don't see stories in here that resonate with you, your culture, your traditions, send them in with a photo if possible, because we want to be as inclusive as possible. And might I mention here too, Larry, you might have seen a story about some Cuban refugees.
Yes.
Who had found a very nice foster home in Green Bay. Maybe Rich even knows these folks. But, Rich, thank you for your comment and or your suggestion. And if you have a story like this or know of somebody who has one, send it in for consideration, please.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned that story. I think it's worth mentioning or talking a little bit more about. We've welcomed refugees many times in history, and it was in the 60s, I think it was kids from Cuba. It's amazing the influence that the kindness shown by this Green Bay family had on the lives of two of those children.
Yes, it's from Barbara Van Oss Marin. There are many people in the Van Oss family in Green Bay still. She's from Green Bay. And this story dates to 1961, and I find it fascinating because the Cuban Revolution of the 50s was not all that long before this. So she didn't mention it, but I think this might have been some of the fallout and things that happened. But St. Joseph Home for Children, it's an orphanage in Green Bay, was asking people in the Green Bay area in 61 to invite some of their young Cuban refugees into their homes over Christmas time. So Gene and Bud Van Oss decided to answer the call, and they didn't just invite one, they invited two. They were Roberto and Maria Garcia, brother and sister, ages 12 and 9. They'd had a series of, they were sent to the United States ahead of their own parents, who apparently couldn't get out of the country yet. And they had a series of foster parents who came and went for short visits, and the children wound up being placed in St. Joseph's home. And so the Van Osses took these folks, these little kids, in. They'd never seen snow before. They loved it because they mixed with their new brothers and sisters, four of them, Bob and Bruce and Liz and Barbara. They took these kids out, and they taught them how to throw snowballs and roll in the snow. And over time, it was many weekends over many months, the kids spent time in the Van Oss home until their parents finally returned and could take them, and they went back to the New York area, I believe. But the imprint that this household had on them. Roberto wrote letters to them through the years. He became an airman in the Air Force. He said, "We took to each other like brothers and sisters. I remember being treated as one of the family. The family love shared with us took away the anxiety and the homesickness." He was talking about the woman he came to call mom for the rest of her life, by the way. Said, "I saw her watchful eye over our response to the meal in front of us, the care she took preparing us to play outside in the cold. It fostered a warm feeling of safety. Thinking of her as my mom came easy." And he stayed in touch with her all the way through to her death in 2006, flew with his wife from California to be at her funeral. And he just...
That's a great story.
She and Dad were people I didn't know before 1961, strangers who changed me forever. I hope their kindness lives in me.
Yeah, that just a great, great story there. Thinking about Mom, you might talk about Tom Flannery's article about his mom.
Yeah, that's Thelma. Thelma Flannery. Thelma touched many people, too. She lived in Crandon just about all of her life. She lived 98 years, past 98 years old. And she was a Depression-era kid, born in Kentucky in 22. And so many people from that area settled in and around Crandon. But she was famous for raising her family and never throwing a thing away because she couldn't. She was had lived through the Depression like so many had. A tin can flattened with some sharp edges was used as a potato chopper for most of her life. Her granddaughter has that in her kitchen to this day. Every scrap of fabric for the clothes she made, they'd be turned into pot holders or used for patching clothes. She's a recycler. But quilts she created, she made more than 1,000 of them over 53 years and gave every one of them away. New baby gifts to children. The notes she got from everybody, handwritten, touched her so much. She kept them all. One said, "I love my Thelma, my Thelma quilt." A great grandson in kindergarten wrote to her, "I hope you know how much this means to me." Love, Aaron, 5 years old. Somebody else thanked her for the personal touch of putting initials on the pot holder she gave them. On and on it goes with those 1,000 quilts. And really, the point of the story is, all these thanks from people touched this lady so much, it kept her going up to 98 years. It gave her purpose. And the point is, being better and making a difference shouldn't be difficult. Let someone know they're appreciated and loved in just two words, and that's thank you. That's something good for the new year ahead.
It is indeed. Chris in Appleton up with us. Chris, what's on your mind?
Hi, hey, thank you. Hey, my wife loves your magazine, and I really enjoy it, too. But I'm asking if you ever do any, like, classroom subscriptions. I'd love to have this at my class to do readings every now and then. What do you think?
If we have what?
Classroom subscriptions?
Oh, classroom subscriptions. I know that some schools have contacted us, and we're in libraries within schools. We've had stories from classrooms. I think in our issue before this one, October, November, we had a story from a class, which was a lot of fun. We had a story from a class near Lake Geneva, and the teacher there asked the students, they're 5 years old, maybe they're pre-K, four, "How do you cook a turkey?" "Well, I stuff it with candy and cook it at 5,000 degrees for an hour and a half, and then I it was just one after another. But so we're in some schools that way, and we do print stories from kids and from teachers. I think we got one in the December or January issue. Are there class subscriptions? I've not heard of one of those. Are there library subscriptions? We've done plenty of those. And we do send some magazines to some classrooms. Some teachers have said they use the magazine as a teaching aid. We've got a lot of bright, brilliant color pictures highlighting the beauty in Wisconsin, and they use it to teach the kids about Wisconsin or a little bit of history in these memory stories, because we're general interest. We scratch the surface of many subjects, so we don't go into things real deeply. But we have some interesting history about the state, and in those smaller nuggets, these teachers seem to like it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Chris, I appreciate it. Maybe you have your library in Appleton, the school library, contact our Wisconsin Magazine. You can get something set up. Well, I did want to mention one thing with the Christmas season here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Every year on Christmas Eve, Santa Claus comes, and only children can call that day and tell Santa Claus what they've been up to and what they'd like for Christmas. So I just wanted to promote that a little bit because Christmas Eve's coming up a week from tomorrow. And your kids can call ahead of time if you want. I just wanted to mention that. You leave a message. They can leave a message on our voicemail, or they can email to ideas@wpr.org. Our voicemail is 833-424-3327, and we'll have that up in our program notes today. But I did want to mention that. You can have your child call ahead of time up to December, and including December 22nd. They can call ahead and leave a message on the phone, give their name, their age, and the city they're from, and Santa would love to hear about good deeds they've done and why Santa should stop by their house, maybe what they'd like to have. Have your kids, your children, call the day of, but if they can't on the day of, get on that voicemail and have them send something. Because we'll play those. We can play those on the air if we get them by the 22nd. So that number, again, is 833-424-3327. And our last teacher who was on the line might want to make that a class assignment. Mike Beto, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much. I look forward. I really enjoyed this edition of Outdoor Wisconsin, Our Wisconsin Magazine, and we'll look forward to your next edition. Thanks, Mike, and happy holidays.
Same to you, Larry.
Mike Beto, editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine, and we just barely scratched the surface on the wonderful stories that are in this edition during this holiday season. So it's always fun to have them with us. Looking ahead to Garden Talk tomorrow, we'll look at how you can make sure your indoor plants get what they need to thrive. That's starting at 11 right here on the Ideas Network. And, of course, right through the afternoon, lots of good things going on here on the Ideas Network. So you stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller.